This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. This is the Morning Run. Han and Uma with you. Brian Fernandez joins us to take a look at the big business stories. One of the biggest stories, of course, is that U-Mobile has signed an agreement, I guess, terminating its network sharing agreement with Maxis. And last Friday, apparently, they notified Maxis via letter of its intent to end this agreement. And the termination is going to take place over the period of 18 months in stages, with a completion date set for 27 December 2018.
Yeah, and that's really a very significant move, because in 2011, when that agreement was signed, U-Mobile was really quite a weak player, and it needed to ride on Maxis's network really to give its subscribers broader coverage.
And all new mobile networks tend to do that, right? They always begin by entering into network sharing agreements, because the capex for setting up your own towers and all of that is astronomical.
Absolutely.
Yeah, certainly. So when you consider how there was that spectrum reallocation, right, recently, so you've got, you know, Maxis, Cellcom and DG, you know, being handed out their versions. But then from that exercise, U-Mobile was widely seen as a winner, because here comes this new guy, you know, really giving the big boys a run for their money, right? So step aside, Maxis, Cellcom, DG, U-Mobile, we are in contention. We got our own spectrum, right? So two bands of the 5 megahertz of the 900 megahertz bands, and 2 times 50 megahertz of the 1,800 megahertz. You know, so it'll come to the tune of some 500 million ringgit, I believe. You know, so with that in place, and I think that is set to kick off by next month. You know, so you've got this news here that U-Mobile will no longer have to ride on Maxis's network.
Yeah, so it's really a coming out party for them. It sets the stage.
Well,
yeah.
Coming out party?
Yeah.
Yay.
Really, as yes, we're part of the really the big boys already. It distinguishes them from the rest of the smaller MVNOs and smaller mobile players. And what it does is also this. They've just crossed in 2017 the 10% market share mark.
Right.
Again, quite a significant progress. The other key thing is also the fact that 2017 will see them break even as well. So we're looking towards them, according to analysts, an IPO in 2018, and that would mean a cash out for some of the shareholders like Tan Sri Vincent Tan, the Sultan of Johor, and Singapore, the ST Group.
Right.
But then, I know, obviously, we got to break it down to the end user, right? So what does this mean for, say, the Maxis users?
This frees up some bandwidth.
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, hopefully for Maxis users, this means that now that U-Mobile users are not jumping on that bandwidth, or not piggybacking? Is that such a word? So piggybacking on the Maxis network. So that should free up more space, more bandwidth for Maxis users, and hopefully that will translate into, you know, more seamless service, faster data services for Maxis users. Right?
And of course, for U-Mobile, it gives them now greater control over their own network as well, which is a big deal, because, you know, when you're paying, I think they were paying Maxis about between 200 to 300 million per annum. Rental.
For Uma, last year they paid Maxis 335 million.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So whatever that money can be used for, you know, for capital expenditure, for building their own infrastructure, it's always good to have control over your own infrastructure.
And not just control, so hopefully more competition now, and hopefully that will also mean better services for Malaysian mobile users.
Correct. Also in the news, Lazada and Alibaba, Jack Ma is just buying stuff. He spent another billion on Lazada, I think raising Alibaba's stake to 83%. Earlier today, we spoke to Karamjit Singh of Digital News Asia to get his thoughts on what this all means.
All right, good morning, Karamjit. So now that Alibaba is set to own 83% of Lazada, what would that mean for the ASEAN e-commerce landscape?
I think it tells everyone that e-commerce is here in a big way now, and that it's and for brick and mortar merchants, it's time to get serious, really serious about, you know, adapting their business to the realities of e-commerce. So it's a bit of a chilling time if you're an e-commerce merchant, if you're a commerce merchant, right, a retailer in the brick and mortar world, actually.
Now, how much do you think this proposed move by Alibaba to gain that greater stake in Lazada, how much is that in tandem with that digital free trade zone, which Jack Ma championed here in Malaysia just a few months ago, back in March?
I think that's probably not a critical component, but it's an important component, right? So we're still trying to figure out what exactly that means. But the good thing about that happening here, when that happened on its own, is that even traditional retailers are starting to take e-commerce a lot more seriously, because here is a credible party that has, you know, been successful in the e-commerce world. And if they're now in your backyard, hey, what's that? What does that mean for my business? Let's start finding out. But so that awareness is there, but it's still not triggered them to take action, from what I hear from established e-commerce merchants and ecosystem players. Our brick-and-mortar merchants are still not serious enough, but it's moving up now. And this is yet another move for them to say, hey, let's start adapting now before we've got no business to adapt to.
Karamjit, it's Uma. Quick question, Karamjit. Is it too late for a lot of them? I mean, have they missed the boat?
So, you know, that's the danger when you start reading tech and you start follow tech, right? You start thinking it's too late. No, the fact that e-commerce in the region, and even from Maximilian Bittner, the CEO of Lazada, you know, Southeast Asia, it's only like 3% of the region's commerce, you know, shopping is going through e-commerce. So it's not too late yet. But now you've got this 800-pound gorilla firmly, you know, staking its tentacles, you know, into the ground in the region and saying, hey, you know, we want to dominate this space. So for merchants, for us consumers, it's good news, right? You're probably going to get things cheaper for a while until they really establish themselves. And then if even Amazon comes in, and I'm not sure that they will, it's kind of sexy to say that they're going to come into the region. Because even right now, you can already buy things off Amazon, correct? And they will ship it to you, and you can get it cheaper for what you get locally. And sometimes they even give you free shipping to Malaysia. And I was shocked. I experienced that once myself a month ago. I was going to try to buy 5 virtual reality headsets, and it knows you're coming in from Malaysia. It says free shipping to Malaysia. I said, straight away, you know what? I thought, my goodness, what does this mean for retailers in this country then?
Wait, hold on, Karamjit, you bought 5 virtual reality headsets. Where was mine? Now, Uma wants to know this.
Karamjit, you shouldn't have told me that. Free shipping for virtual reality headsets, I'm there.
But nevertheless, going back to this number that you mentioned, Karamjit, now, given the fact that the penetration rate for e-commerce here in the ASEAN context is only 3%, that presents plenty of upside for, you know, for a potential entrance, right? So why not Amazon as well? You know, isn't there enough room for both Alibaba, by extension Lazada, and also Amazon to come and compete here in this same space?
Yes, but you know, look at what Amazon is doing. They just acquired Whole Foods, right? And that's just a whole, you know, huge creature to absorb into your business. And I think if I were Amazon, I'd say, hey, I still haven't tapped the potential in Europe, you know, much less why worry about Southeast Asia? And they've already got business coming in from this region. So maybe you just want to be stronger where you can. And say, if both of them come here, it's going to be just a price war. And it benefit consumers for sure. And it'll even accelerate the pace of disruption of traditional retailers. So they may take their while before they decide to come in, or they may not. They may just start serving, you know, this region from the U.S. where they are. Because remember, half the things that are on Amazon come from China anyway. They'll just divert it from China straight to this region. So in a way, they could probably already be here, you know, so they don't need a big presence. Because their branding is so strong. So I'm just right now more concerned and looking at local merchants, how they adapt. And one of the realities is, and I realized this last year when I was moderating an e-commerce panel with Exabytes, that organizes a very good e-commerce conference every year, is that even the e-commerce merchants on that panel were saying that, you know, the days of us being traders are coming to an end, you know. You got to own the product that you're selling on e-commerce. If you don't own the brand, then you're not going to be able to make margins on what you're selling. So those, and even last night I was on a WhatsApp conversation with a few people because it's already quite late, and one of the comments was the same thing. If you're not a brand owner of the product, your days are numbered. You know, you've got to start looking for another business in which to earn a living. So it's quite scary. And then, you know, when I was talking about virtual reality, one of the leading e-commerce experts in the country said even virtual reality stores are going to come. And that will make the shopping experience a lot more compelling, right? And a lot closer to the tactile world, too. So
So that's why you bought those five virtual reality headsets.
Hey, Karmjit, one last question. I don't know if you can answer this for us, but, you know, Amazon operated primarily out of China, you know, which was a great base for Alibaba because suddenly all of those logistics and automation was all set in place. When it comes to Southeast Asia and e-commerce, where do we stand regarding automation, logistics? Because that is that last mile is absolutely crucial for the consumer.
But that's why there are so many entrepreneurs targeting that. To answer your question directly before I wander off, the last mile is getting stronger in Malaysia, you know, all the time. So that's being improved on because people see there's a weakness, right? So it's improving all the time, actually. If you speak to e-commerce merchants here, you can do same-day delivery, still too early in the morning, delivery in the urban areas in the country, right, from Johor to Penang to probably even Ipoh and definitely in the Klang Valley. So you've got same-day delivery already, and that is improving all the time. So we're getting there. And actually, coincidentally, about 3 weeks ago, I was visiting the Lazada Malaysia headquarters, and, you know, they launched a new warehouse with 200 over 1,000 square feet of space, and he said they're already looking to expand on that just in this short period of time. So imagine just the uptake and the volume of, you know, goods that are coming through them. So... you know, it's all going, you know, very interesting, the e-commerce space. And when I visited them and he was talking about the people they have set up and what they're doing, you know, in my mind, I said, oh, my goodness, you know, our brick-and-mortar merchants do not know what's about to hit them. And now even more with Alibaba, you know, they're doubling down on this region. For consumers, it's good, short-term. But I worry about the need. If our merchants, you know, retailers cannot compete, then, you know, a lot of the money is going out of the country, right? And then very few jobs are being created here. So even mall owners have to be worried about, you know, the new reality of the business. Maybe 10 years down the road, let's not kid ourselves that this is going to change the game in the next 5 years. But change is coming. And to answer your early question, it's not too late. You got to adapt. And some of them, by adapting, it means that, hey, you know, look, we cannot run this business anymore. We probably only got another 3-4 years. In the meantime, while we're still cash flow positive, what else can we do?
That was Karmjit Singh of Digital News Asia talking about the Alibaba acquisition, $1 billion into Lazada. We've got the markets coming your way after the news, so don't go anywhere. This is The Morning Run on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.